hours of talk, civil rights preparation, and interviews from the streets, as well as an update from Monterey, California, and the Under God Pledge of Allegiance controversy on Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Stay with us.
Now the Israelis have a nudist camp on Taba, right by Egypt on the Gulf of Aqaba. Bathers sunning on the beach were dangerously within reach of Muslim guards patrolling near the spa. And now it says to cover up in the Koran, but those Hebrews hung it out to get a tan. So for fear of getting heated, the Egyptians just retreated, which provoked this novel thought for a peace plan. Take off your clothes to those you oppose. Be well exposed to your foes and strike a pose. No need to hurl a rock across the fence if your enemy is being real attentive. Strip to the buff, stick out your duff and strut your stuff. The sight of muff will be enough to halt the tough. Forget about an armored probe, you'll get more room if you disrobe. Relations will improve around the globe. Now the colonel of the Egyptian police platoon made this comment as he peered beyond the dune. All these sabras on the Sinai really look a sight to mine eye, though I think we'd better take some action soon. As he turned, he saw the men of his fine crew, field glasses trained on each attractive Jew. So he went and gave the order to redefine the border 100 yards down farther from the view. Take off your clothes to those you oppose. Be well exposed to your foes and strike a pose. You can unveil a devastating offensive. It's healthier than war and less expensive. Strip to the buff, stick out your duff and strut your stuff. The sight of muff will be enough to halt the tough. Forget about an armored probe, you'll get more room if you disrobe. Relations will improve around the globe. Now here's the surest way to end a running feud. Simply approach your adversary in the nude. If he or she's approved, they'll think it's lewd and move away. Who knows, they might be in the mood, you win either way. So if you're fighting and you just can't take it, you just might try your luck at standing naked. Before they have another riot, Northern Ireland should try it. The whole world could ease its tensions if we'd only undertake it. I propose this brand new cure for hot disputes. Have the warring parties meet in birthday suits. Imagine how a summit conference might progress. Formalities abandoned as each delegate undressed. No harm in getting back to bare essentials. World leaders must admit it has potential. For uncovered, one can make appeals to what the other side reveals and see they're not so different after all. Take off your clothes to those you oppose. Be well exposed to your foes and strike a pose. No need to hurl a rock across the fence if your enemy is being real attentive. Strip to the buff, stick out your duff and strut your stuff. The sight of muff will be enough to halt the tough. Forget about an armored probe, you'll get results if you disrobe. Relations can improve around the globe. Oh, yes, indeed. Relations will improve all over the globe.
And good morning. I'm Robert Norris. This is, of course, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM, or also at 101.1 FM, and www.freakradio.org, as well as a variety of other outlets. Mentioned a few moments ago in a prior taped segment that you heard right before this show, Free Radio Olympia, Point Arena Pirate Radio, Post World Radio, different folks throughout the country, and indeed at times throughout the world are listening to this station on the internet, and we're also being rebroadcast. So you are a part of a larger community. If you wish to call in and speak or respond to what you hear here or things that you don't hear that you think should be coming out, so consider that. The phone number is 831-427-3772. 831-427-FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz. And, of course, we're still struggling to find a new place. If you have a place which has an entrance, access to a bathroom, electricity, DSL compatible, waterproof, secure, about 100 square feet, we can pay rent and bills. Please call us at 427-4523. Free Radio is looking for another place to move. And if you want to get continuous coverage of, the kind of weird stuff and important stuff you hear coming out of Free Radio often, please pay some attention to the needs we have so we can meet your needs as well. You can also get on the air with your own show. You can also give us a public service announcement. We can pass on information to the community that might not otherwise be get out there through mainstream channels. Give us a call at the same number, 427-4523, or email us at frsc@freakradio.org. frsc@freakradio, one word, freak, F-R-E-A-K, radio.org. If you want to catch me on this show, again, 427-3772, or you can email me at rnorse2.org. rnorse2.org, in case you want to reach me. And actually, that's, what am I saying? It's rnorse2@hotmail.com. I'm getting a little weird this morning, but that's it. rnorse2@hotmail.com is the email address in case you are unable to reach by phone or you just want to send a longer document or you have some other thoughts that can better be put in email form, and I'll try to keep an eye on that, booting up the computer even as I speak. We've got some interesting stuff this morning, assuming that I haven't mislaid the tapes, which is always a ever-present danger. I was down at Michael Anudow's practice session before a kind of mock Supreme Court, day before yesterday. Michael Anudow is the fellow who, acting as his own attorney, is taking to court the under God phrase in the Pledge of Allegiance. You may remember, in fact, he enraged 99 senators in the U.S. Senate by, in fact, winning in federal court. And that case has been accepted for review by the U.S. Supreme Court. And I'm going to be getting into that a little bit more as we near 10 o'clock. And hopefully the tapes are set up. I don't have terribly good news on that score, though, because the tapes didn't come out very well. We aren't going to be able to hear as much of it as I'd hoped. So for those who are listening specifically for that purpose, my apologies. There was a better recording made of Mr. Newdow's presentation and the questions to Mr. Newdow about preparing for his Supreme Court appearance by a professional firm in Los Angeles, which I believe we... they may provide some kind of public access. I think the tapes were done to some extent for Mr. Newdow's benefit in preparing for the Supreme Court argument. But it's quite possible that they may be accessible, and I will actually look into it if anybody wants to get in touch with me. And that the number to call is the off-air line, which is 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, which is also a place you can leave messages for comments, criticisms, suggestions that you have but you don't want to go on the air and that you think are intended for me specifically and for this show and not just, say, for Free Radio generally. Free Radio generally, as I said, has the voicemail 427-4523 in case you want to, you know, get something to the collective, which I encourage you to do. We can always use input. We can use checks. We can use donations of equipment. We can use your participation. And, of course, the on-air number is 427-4523. So, we also have some other things coming up on the air. This is sort of a lot happening this week. The One Dance Summit is coming up, and that is the kind of an event arranged by Sylvia and Richard Oxman, who have gotten together a number of what would one say, progressive speakers and organizers and activists, and they actually have a website on this issue. We're going to be talking, hopefully, with Richard around 11. At 11:30, we're going to be talking with a representative, I think, depending on whether this has actually been worked out, and we'll see as we go through the show, Carol Moseley Braun, a presidential candidate. And our hope with talking with Jane Kaiser of Patients Inmates Rights Collective, or Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective, actually, PIRC, I always make that error, is unable to come this morning, but she's listening in. So if you've got, you want to encourage her in incoming calls to come on down to the studio and kick a little butt with the local psychiatric terrorists who are still engaging in forced drugging, forced incarceration, and need to be held accountable. We've done some discussion of that with Robert Whitaker in his book Mad in America, how there's essentially a major snow job being done around psychiatric drugs, which he does really a remarkable job of exposing, and which many activists have been fighting, at least in terms of compulsory medication and the huge profit motive that's involved here, and the strange kind of psychiatric, the stamp of approval, giving psychiatrists something to do, to prescribe drugs so they can indicate that they are somehow getting a jump on, quote, mental illnesses, when in fact that's not really the case, at least in terms of objective studies according to Whitaker, which I found very interesting, and I encourage people to look into. There was also a Democratic Party caucus yesterday, which was reported on by the Santa Cruz Sentinel, and reporter Becky Johnson was also there. Hopefully she'll be giving us an update on that. And there are other updates we're looking for, and we'll be getting into. But first, I'm going to give you a little more of Mark Levy, who's always one of my favorites. Mark is a local folk singer who actually writes about Santa Cruz issues. What a concept. Can't seem to get Comic News editor to get that cartoons locally about the Santa Cruz situation, but we can't seem to get the Metro writing a heck of a lot about local situations, and City on a Hill has completely eliminated its letter page, so you can't write to City on a Hill. But some people are still doing it, and Mark Levy is one of them. I'm going to play a couple songs from Mark, and you can listen in if you'd like.
road I'm running. Information highway. Log on to the network. Watch the screen and type away. Yeah, you're now gonna make it happen. Take the world in cyberspace. Fire up the PC and plug in to the interface. And like a true techno child, I keep all of it piled. Save it in a flash and hope it doesn't crash.
So it's about 8:25 on January 8th, 2004. We're in front of Irish Pub, and here's a man with a guitar sitting on a park bench, I should say, a sidewalk bench, illegally. You cannot perform on a bench, sir. You should know better. And you also have a display device with money on it. That's just shocking.
Son, we feel shy. I'm still loving you. Now why shouldn't I be able to sing out here to the people that enjoy it? And if the mountains crumble too sweet, you be here with me. Inspiration is what you are to me. Inspiration, girl, I'll see.
Barry, you're looking to put on a concert.
We're going to put on a concert. I'm looking at the target dates, April 20th, Saturday. I think it's the 20th, I believe so. That's the target date because I have a lot to talk to public authorities and whatnot and, you know, parks and recreation. But it's going to be a peaceful, free concert. And I think there's enough good street musicians on this street right here on Pacific Avenue where I'm sitting. And
excessive noise.
He needs a muffler, but I think that there's enough talent out. In fact, I know there is. I've been playing for 36 years. I know talent when I see it, and there's enough down here to put on a wonderful free show, and we're going to call it Open Air Celebration, and just free. Come on in, and that's my goal. Now, if I make it, cool. If I don't, that's their loss.
Come to the SAFE meeting, the Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, the Street Performers Union. We meet every Wednesday at Baker Square at 6 o'clock in the evening, and we might be able to, you know, kick in a little something toward your event.
Perhaps.
Also, I notice you have you're getting a little change from your music, but you say Officer Wendy Bynes has taken a dim view of the...
No, I called Rick Seeley, an investigator for the DA, because he had interviewed me about my friend getting stabbed in my camp where I live in the mountains.
This was a while ago, right?
Yes.
He was actually a regular mall sergeant. Now he's with the DA's office.
Yeah, now he's...
Son, Eric Seeley's...
Well, anyway, I'm not going to get political on this because I need friends in all places, I suppose, to survive. However, Rick has showed me grace, and I'm going to talk to him about security for the show, and I talked to him about Wendy, and Wendy doesn't bother me anymore.
But she had been telling you move your guitar
prior
case.
Prior to my phone call, yes, she told me to move.
How many times has she told you that?
Twice.
And how long ago was this?
No, it's been about 3 months now.
Oh,
She's been a good girl.
Well, let's hope she continues.
That's what I hope. I just want to play the music.
So, Bear, folks can find you here on this bench sometimes in front of the Irish Pub.
let's get together on this concert, though, for April. I want a spring gala event. I want it to be free. We can make it happen. I know we can. I have the musicians. We have the equipment. It's just a matter of, you know, just putting the small change together, you know, the this and that. Okay, we've got to have permits. Okay, we've got to have security. Okay, we've got to have trash. It's just a matter of small stuff like that. You know, once the logistics are together, we're going to rock.
Thanks, Barrett. Good luck. We're talking with
Dan.
Dan, we're in front of Pacific Trading Company. You have a modest cap with a modest amount of money in it and a modest-looking instrument. That's a flute of some sort.
A Native American flute.
How long have you been performing within 10 feet of the building? Actually, within 4 feet of the building.
Most of the time.
And you have gotten no complaints?
No.
And some donations. You just got a dollar.
That's good.
Yeah.
I need gas.
So how long have you been out here tonight?
For about an hour and a half.
And in one place without moving, you're violating the move-along law.
I've been three different locations.
And have you been told to move, or you just choose?
No, I have not been told to move.
Are you just sort of moving around because you feel like it?
Are you apprehensive? Sometimes I have to move.
Because?
Well, last night I was playing right around here somewhere, and a police officer pulled over in front of me in the street here, and then one pulled over behind. And
they
this
just wanted
one,
to hear your music.
Yeah, that could be. But recently, especially during the holidays, they asked me to leave several times.
And when was the last time they did this?
About last week.
And on what basis did they say you should leave?
They told me I needed permission from the store owners. Written permission from the store owners.
Were you playing in an alcove, or were you in front of the building? Were you on the sidewalk?
No, I was playing in front of the building.
So you were actually in the public space?
Yeah, but the stores were closed.
Right.
So
now which officer? Do you know the name of the officer who told you this?
No, I
don't. I'm always curious who spreads this kind of misinformation around. But in the last week, you haven't been harassed?
Well, in the last several days, no, I have not.
And you spend about how many hours out here on the average per day?
Maybe one or two, probably like two, three sometimes.
Are performers cooperating with you? Other performers?
Not necessarily.
So people are kind
sometimes
of interfering?
Sometimes they don't. There are those who are really respectful, and then there's others who aren't. Like this incident just occurred.
So you're talking about the man with the guitar.
Right.
The man we just spoke to, actually, Bear, who's planning a musical event, you know, he wants
right.
to.
Yeah, I know Bear. I've actually played some music with him before.
But in this instance, he's a little louder than you might prefer.
Well, exactly, but I mean, he's so close. That's the thing. If he was down another half a block, then it would be fine.
It's interesting, though, that in order to, you can no longer sit on the sidewalk within 50 feet of that spare change machine at Borders, you know. So it's removed an entire quarter of the block from use.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
But all for the good of our local community, so that the ragamuffins don't haunt the area. Of course, now they're haunting it standing up.
That's right.
Anything else to report? How much do you make a day on this, on average?
Well, there was 2 days last week that I made $6 for each day.
For 2 or 3 hours' work?
Yeah.
That's a pretty meager wage.
Yes, it is.
But do you feel you get some benefit out of doing this, or you simply know this as a community benefit?
Well, I like to play for people, and I get a lot of compliments, and people like it. The children like it. Children especially like it. On the other hand, I get practice too. And I practice every day anyway, so I might as well do it out here.
Can we hear a little bit of your playing?
Sure.
Okay.
the short version.
Cool. Hey, we've been listening to
Dan.
Thank you, Dan.
And you're tuned to Free Radio at 96.3 FM or 101.1 FM, in case you wondered. Some recorded interviews from the street there. And now getting into the announced replay of Michael Newdow's, I guess I would call it his practice session before eight lawyers in Monterey 2 days ago, in preparation for the United States Supreme Court hearing on the question of whether Under God is appropriate in the Pledge of Allegiance, essentially required of students. It's not required in the sense, I guess, you can stand silently or you can leave the classroom, but of course there's the fact that it's in the pledge and most people are directed by the government to say it. Mr. Newdow regards as a basic violation of the First Amendment's Establishment Clause. Of course, the Constitution of the United States, First Amendment states, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble for a redress of grievances. It's one of the only amendments I know by heart because it's such an important one. But I went down there to Monterey, advised by attorney Paul Sanford, who organized this, the first of several practice sessions. I guess Newdow plans to be speaking before the Supreme Court in March or thereabouts. And it was very interesting to listen to. Unfortunately, the recording quality is pretty bad. And what I've got here is a few samples of it, not terribly well edited, I've got to warn you. But also some interesting, I've got an article about it from the Monterey Peninsula Herald I'm going to read you. And I've also got some interviews afterwards, a brief exchange with Mr. Newdow, as well as those who are listening. And I've got my own commentary on it. So for those of you who are tuning in by internet, because I suspect most of the people down there are not local Santa Cruzans. They were from Monterey or from elsewhere. Actually, some people came from much further away to this historic meeting, you will not really be able to hear what I'd hoped you could hear. And as I said at the beginning of the show, I think there will be a better tape available, not necessarily from me, but I'm going to talk to Paul Sanford and see if he can make it available for radio broadcast at a future time. Maybe he can make that announcement, in fact, do so even in a more mainstream and accessible form, because I think it's quite educational and quite interesting, particularly if you're interested in the legal specifics of this struggle. I've been fascinated with the law for a long time. I'm foolish and class-biased and rigid as the law is. It's always fascinated me, fantasy, that somehow we can get our protections from the law. And at various times you can, and so that's a consideration. Anyway, the story from Brandy Underwood in the Monterey Peninsula Herald of yesterday. It's on the front page of the second section. There's a picture of Newdow and the assembled group. There's about, 70 or 80 people in the audience. He's at a podium facing a panel of eight people in robes. And I'm going to read this article, and you'll get a sense of it. Monterey takes a pledge. Newdow presents case to drop Under God in mock trial. The man made famous for his quest to eliminate Under God from the Pledge of Allegiance brought his arguments to Monterey on Friday. Eight powerful Central Coast legal minds gathered at the Monterey College of Law to hear Michael Newdow publicly practice for the first time the oral argument he plans to present to the United States Supreme Court this spring. "We wanted to make sure that the school and community at large had the opportunity to participate in this debate," said Frank Hespy, dean of the Monterey College of Law. Paul Sanford, a Santa Cruz lawyer and professor at the college, invited Newdow to the school to rehearse the argument. The eight Central Coast lawyers and judges took on the roles of eight Supreme Court justices who will hear the case. The ninth justice, Antonin Scalia, has recused himself from hearing the appeal. Sanford, one of more than 400 volunteers in Newdow's camp, said he contacted Newdow because he believes in what he is doing. He even hopes to travel to Washington to hear Newdow present his case. "A lot of people have volunteered. That's one of the coolest things about this process," Newdow said. In 2001, he filed Elk Grove Unified School District versus Newdow, partly because he thought his now 9-year-old daughter shouldn't be forced to hear the Pledge of Allegiance on a daily basis because it is hurtful. if a student does not believe in God. That was the basis of his argument Friday, which also said the inclusion of the phrase violates the constitutional separation of church and state. Newdow said he originally had planned a case to remove the phrase "In God We Trust" off U.S. currency, but he felt his chances were better with the pledge. The small classroom where the practice took place was packed with only a few seats left in the back. The students listened, some nodding at particular points, as Newdow made his 30-minute argument to the panel of mock justices who interrupted him to ask questions throughout the presentation. Afterward, the panel provided feedback. Then they started the process for a second time. Michelle Walsh, head of the Monterey County American Civil Liberties Union and a lawyer based in Pacific Grove, took on the role of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. During a break after the first argument, Welch said she was impressed with Newdow's knowledge of the law. Others serving on the panel included Santa Cruz attorney Enda Brennan, Salinas attorney Michael Masuda, Monterey County Superior Court Judge Adrian Grover, and retired Judge Richard Silver, Monterey attorney Rip Michael Stamp, and Santa Cruz County Superior Court Judge Jeff Almquist. Michael Sweet, a first-year law student at the school, said he thought Newdow had the rule of law on his side, but he personally didn't agree with his goal. It's interesting. I couldn't find anybody in the audience who disagreed with the goal. Dana Dutchney, Monterey College of the Law student body president, said she had discussed the case in the constitutional law class last semester. She said Newdow might have a difficult time presenting his case because he is a physician first and a lawyer second. Newdow, an atheist, grew up in Teaneck, New Jersey, and graduated from Brown University, University of Michigan Law School, and the UCLA Medical School. Joel Franklin, a Monterey attorney, law professor, and former dean at the Monterey College of the Law, runs the school's moot court competition, where students argue a made-up case in front of a panel of jurists. He said Newdow's presentation was much like a moot court competition because Newdow had the chance to practice his case and receive advice for his future arguments. Newdow plans to practice his oral arguments later this year at Stanford and Georgetown University Law Schools before he goes to the Supreme Court. So, here's a little bit of that actual presentation by Newdow and some of the really hard-to-hear questions. Before we go into that, however, a brief phone call here. I've got an incoming call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi there, Robert. Richard Oxman here from One Dance at People Summit.
Hey, Richard, you're calling an hour early.
I know. You know, early, late to me is, totally, there's no time here. So I will try to call later, but this was the chance I had, you know, to call, and I'll be glad to try and call later. You can feel free to call me.
Okay, the reason I'm saying that is because we have, we can give you a brief time now if you'd like. We're in the middle of the Under God affair. I don't know if you're listening to the radio.
No, I wasn't able to listen, but I'll be glad to call at 11 if I can. It's just I want to give you a warning that I don't know what's happening here this morning. It's just everything is a million things happening. So,
Why don't you give us a quick kind of two-minute wrap-up, and then maybe you can call back and expand on it.
Okay. And so tell me what you want me to say when you get me on there, okay?
Sure. Well, you are on right now.
I am on. Okay. So let's see. I should just let people know that the... thanks, Robert. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a really historic event in Santa Cruz, and I pick my words very carefully, January 12th, 13th, and 14th, which is this coming Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, from noon to midnight, all 3 days. We've got people coming from all over the world, activists, educators, filmmakers, librarians, citizens coming from all over who are interested in change. We're going to be addressing the pressing economic, environmental, social, political issues of our time. But it's not going to be a talk-a-thon. We have Michael Parenti coming in, Cynthia McKinney, who might declare her Green Party candidacy at this event, William Bloom, Rogue State, and Killing Hope. So many people coming in from all over, and people who are not coming in are going to be providing video footage, exclusive video footage.
Richard, this is called the One Dance Summit.
That's right.
And it's Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday from noon to 11 o'clock at night. And where is that going to be held?
It's going to be mainly at the First Congregational Church at 900 High Street. Thanks for narrowing the focus here, Robert. Thank
sure.
you. 900 High Street. You got to get there. You want to call me, really, for reservations here at in Santa Cruz at 427-5353. Okay, 427-5353 would be a message machine at this point, and we'll get back to you. Speak very clearly when you leave your number. You do have to make reservations. If you don't get around to connecting with me, get opening night. Make sure you get up there between 6:15 and 6:30 to do a kind of standby basis. But it's going to be a huge impact. And what we're doing is we're focusing on strategies that can implement demands we're going to make of the federal government and on others in 2004.
Give an example of the kinds of strategies you're thinking about, Richard.
The kinds of strategies?
Uh-huh.
Okay. One of the things we're going to be doing is we're going to be laying the groundwork for what will arguably be one of the more influential demonstrations in U.S. history. We're going to have what's called a people's occupation, and that's going to involve people from all over the country taking a direct action in the name of certain demands that we derive at one dance and from input from people all over the country at one dance in April. On April 15th, starting on April 15th for 3 days running, starting on Tax Day, we are going to tax the government with demands that we're making. There are a lot of things that take beyond our lifetimes to achieve, as we all know. A lot of things that take time by their nature, but there are many, many things that we all know that could have been done and should have been done yesterday, and we're going to make sure that they're done tomorrow in the way that they have always been done in this country. In the history of this country, there's never been an instance in which voting alone or writing to disingenuous legislators alone took care of things or changed or made for significant political social change. We are going to do what John Pilger has begged people to do now for quite a while, to take to the streets. We're going to take direct action against what's going on in this country, and we're going to force change.
So you're going to kind of organize some kind of mass protest, huh?
Yeah, and it's not going to be a marching in circles. People are not going to, on April 15th, not going to go to D.C. or San Francisco, spend time and money and effort and just go home and watch TV again. We're not going to be marching in circles, like Patrice Jones says. We are going to be showing up, and we're not going to go away. One of the great things we're going to do is we're going to inundate the media for the first time in the history of this country. We're going to have all the people involved in the demonstration in April proactive from the day that this summit ends until April 15th for 3 months running, unrelentingly, incessantly. We are going to inundate the country, the media, with press releases. We're going to send so many, so often, there's going to only be one press release in this country. And that's going to give the public a chance to self-educate. People are going to ask, what's going on? They're not going to be distracted by Michael Jackson stories and the like, because there's not going to be any time for the media to be focusing on that like they have in the past. Even the weather is going to be affected. The weather people are not going to have time to do what they've been doing forever. Mm-hmm. We're going to have the demands on the table, and everybody in the country is going to be talking only about those demands.
Did you have any sense of, I understand that some of these demands are going to be coming out of this conference, but do you have any sense of some of these demands might be?
Well, I mean, just from the top of my head, we're going to abolish the death penalty in 2004. Anybody who's listening to this, who wants to abolish the death penalty, please join hands with us. Anybody who wants to place a moratorium, immediate moratorium on the building of prisons, join hands with us. Anyone who wants to stop the torture in prisons, join hands with us. Anybody who wants to have health coverage for the entire country, including documented and undocumented workers, as it stands right now, including everybody in the country, and have the top quarter of the top 1% pay for it, and the corporations who haven't paid taxes within memory pay for it, join hands with us. We got anyone who wants the troops home from Iraq and from Afghanistan and elsewhere, Okinawa, join hands with us. You know, we're going to draw a line through the progressive community. We're not going to do what people like, God bless him, Tim Robbins does. You know, he says he gets on the Donahue show, he gets intimidated. He says, I'm against the invasion of Iraq, but I was for the invasion of Afghanistan. That's not going to work anymore. It's not going to work anymore for people, so-called progressives like Michael Moore, to get on the Amy Goodman show and laugh about how maybe we need a butcher of Kosovo to replace Bush and have Amy, God bless her, with all the good that she does, look the other way because she's raising funds with his NASCAR caps and books and not call him on it. We're not going to accept any war criminal.
Now, let me ask
any wannabe war criminal.
Richard, let me ask you, you've named some folks who I guess are familiar to some of us, but can you tell us a little bit about some of the people who will be attending? Pretend that you're dealing with people who don't know who these folks are. Give us an example of some of the people you've invited to this conference.
Okay, thank you very much, Robert. I need your help with this. Thank you. Pulitzer Prize nominee Michael Parenti, from Yale University originally, who has written 17 books or more, has currently his most recent book, Assassination of Julius Caesar. He's going to be there. He's written 250 articles. Michael's a world-famous lecturer. He's going to, by the way, for all the 30 years of his speaking or so, when he comes, this is a very important note for all of our speakers, they're going to be given the speech of their lifetimes. So Stan Goff, who's another one of our speakers, going to be on Tuesday night, he's a former Special Rangers Delta Force instructor, and he's a 20-year military veteran. He's speaking out against the war. He has a son in Iraq right now serving there. He is going to be on fire. He's going to be given a speech that would be comparable to hearing Frederick Douglass during the times of formalized institutionalized slavery. Cynthia McKinney, a former congresswoman for 10 years who was ousted by the progressives in her district because she spoke out against 9/11 and suggested that maybe there was something going on there that we haven't learned about after 10 years in Congress. She's going to be there, and she is going to kill you. She's going to be on fire, too. William Bloom is going to be there. I think I mentioned before, author of Rogue State, Killing Hope. When, by the way, Killing Hope is where we got our theme for the summit. It's called One Dance. Because in the 60s, the Tupamaros in Uruguay, they had something going around that went like this: o bailan todos or no baila nadie. Either everyone dances or no one dances. So it's in that spirit we're getting together. Who else? Greg Ellick, who is an expert on the NATO war crimes, the expert on the abominations that took place in Yugoslavia. He'll be there. Eve Engler from Canada, who got kicked out of Concordia University for being too active a student activist. He's an expert on the biomedical industrial complex. I can't even give you the... We have all-stars sitting on the bench who aren't even going to be able to get up there and speak, like Mark Zeppesauer, who you all know. He used to be with the Comic News, who is a great writer and author and activist in his own right. So many people from all over the world. We're supposed to have exclusive video footage from Aaron Patterson, who was on death row for 17 years and recently got off not guilty all that time. We've got so many people. Our website, which is onedancesummit.org, onedancesummit.org. We don't even have time to enter all of the talent that's going to be either on stage or in the audience. Marta Russell, who is arguably the leading proponent people who are handicapped or physically challenged in the country. I don't know what the politically correct term is these days, but the point is she's going to be in the audience there, and she's going to be just coming from New York, having flown out here to enjoy this, to take part in this. There's going to be a lot of networking taking place. There's going to be a lot of opportunity for these people to have brought out of them the very, very best because of the interplay between them. So this is going to be quite a thing. There's nothing even close, I think, as far as I know, in Santa Cruz or anywhere else for that matter, that's taking place in this country like this with this kind of ambitious intention.
Any local people are you inviting?
Yes, thank you for asking. One of the people we haven't been able to get on in the program yet, I think, Ron Swenson, who's going to do something really special on the on solutions, alternatives, vis-a-vis the oil crisis. He's going to be doing a special workshop in the afternoon. Stephen Zunez, who's a chairman of the Peace and Justice Studies Program at the University of San Francisco. A lot of people know Stephen. He's going to be up there on Tuesday with Jim Loeb, who's a famous a Washington, D.C. reporter for 20 years, flying out here to take part in a little panel with Larry Everest, author of this great new definitive book on Iraq that came out. We've got Nasir Barghouti, who's a brother of Omar Barghouti, who writes on ZNet. He's a ZNet contributor from the Mideast. Nasir's flying up from San Diego to represent the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, and he will be speaking early on Tuesday at 6:30. I don't want anyone to miss opening night, though. I don't want anyone to miss that. Mickey Z is going to be MC, and he's going to be a total delight. We're giving out 1,000 of his books, and 1,000 books overall, so most of which are his.
And who is Mickey Z again?
He He is a Z-Net contributor, an order of the murdering of my years. He wrote a book that we're giving out called Saving Private Power, The Hidden History of World War II, which is essential reading for everybody that comes to this summit. He's an author of a few books, and he's got a new collection coming out. But people know him mostly as a contributor online there to Michael Albert's Z-Magazine Z-Net thing there. So you can read Mickey's articles on everything from vegan, you know, from food to just about, he writes on just about everything, myths, just like Boom writes. I can't even keep up with what's happened. We have the Veterans for Peace coming up from Santa Barbara who do that incredible Arlington West display. They're going to be doing a workshop, so if anyone wants to do a comparable Arlington West, you know, which deals with the crosses laid out on the beaches, you know, if we had the tourists coming in town right now, we would have 480-some-odd crosses laid out on the beach there and lit up with candles at night if the weather permitted. That's what these guys do, the Veterans for Peace. They're coming in from all over the country to go to to do a workshop here at the library following a speech of Michael Parenti's to a small group of 50 to 70 people. That's something not to miss. We're going to have, by the way, we need volunteers. We need people to help us with this. We've been working, we're just starting to get a lot of great help in Santa Cruz, man. This thing was originally slated for Salt Lake City, Utah, and because of the pollution there, which is a great story in and of itself, we had to switch venues. We had to come and have it in Santa Cruz. Well, we landed on our feet. After all the arrangements have been made internationally, people changed gears, moved laterally, and we ended up in Santa Cruz. So since you're here, if you're in earshot of my voice, you have an opportunity to attend this thing. 75353 to leave a message and leave a clear number for us to get back. Robert, you know, I really, really appreciate. Oh, and by the way, speaking of Robert, we are going to be doing something. You know, I mentioned to Cynthia McKinney about the sleeping band.
Go ahead.
I said, hey, guys, hey, Cynthia, you know, hey, all of you, you want to say something about the sleeping band here? You know, the cruel, cruel sleeping band? And her response immediately was, why not do something about the sleeping band? So there you go. That's the spirit. And we are going to do something about it, okay? And by the way, this is a really important test. The people in the audience who are used to coming to things like this that they think this is about for entertainment, they don't even think about it anymore. They're on automatic. You know, it's like Beckett said, a habit is the great deadener. People will be sitting in that audience, as they almost always do for the most part, just going through an evening such and such. But that's not where we're about. And we're going to make it clear that that's not what we're about. We want people to test themselves right away. In the midst of the summit, there's going to be a city, I can tell you now, everybody, there's going to be a city council meeting. We want people to show up for a press conference at 3:30 on Tuesday, where we're going to have Parenti there saying something against the sleeping band. We're going to have Greg Ellick saying something, who knows about crimes, saying something against the sleeping band. Maybe Mickey Z will show up, and I think everyone who's connected with the summit is going to show up, and we want to have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people for the first time in Santa Cruz show up to speak on behalf of the homeless, okay? Because we have enough of this stuff of, you know, supporting the property classes, the privileged, and turning away from the people who are on the street in these cold, cold nights. That's just for starters, okay?
That's at 3:30 on Tuesday.
That's right.
The second day of the conference.
That's right. Uh-huh. Right in the middle. That's right. Right in the middle of all the million things we've got to do. We know what our priorities are. We know we're not going to do anything for these people overseas unless we're going to be able to do something for people who are right brushing shoulders with us. And we're going to go in solidarity on everything with people of color, with the people in the churches, with the police, with the firefighters, with labor, with academics. Everybody is going to join in on this. This administration is not only in serious trouble. This system is in serious trouble.
But have you invited Mayor Scott Kennedy to address your summit?
No, Mayor Scott Kennedy will not be addressing the summit. Mayor Scott Kennedy is most likely to attend, along with 450 others, on opening night. But no, he will not be speaking. There are no local politicians who are slated to speak. And I think that's a kind of definitive take there. I think we have no more room for starters. But there are many, many other reasons. You know, in everything I'm talking about here, there are many, many variables to consider. And I can't go into them right now, but I'd be glad to do them at leisure at another time. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
So what's the cost of this?
I hope everyone will show up.
Is I noticed looking on the website, you say no one will be turned away for lack of money, but there is there a cost for this as well?
Yeah, we have a price structure that we put on for people, and you know some people are being really sweet. We have a $100 price figure for like attending all three evenings, you know, core presentations, and then of course people are open to if they were still open to go to lunch with McKinney or Brandy or Alec or Mickey, you know, and a lot of the other activities in the afternoon that are free anyway for everyone, and then we were asking for $50 for opening night. But the bottom line is, if you think of it as like, for want of a better expression or analogy, going to an airport on standby, if people aren't given a, you know, okay or confirmation from me on the phone ahead of time, which is fine, you show up ahead of time like 6:15, 6:30 at the First Congregational Church in the evening, which is the meaty part of this whole thing, and you do a kind of like an airport standby thing. You know, we got have an obligation to certain people to let them in first, but we really are, you know, thanks to Michael Parenti, he came up with the expression, no one will be turned away for inability to pay, right? We were originally going to just say in Salt Lake City, everything's free for everybody, you know, which is still the feeling of it, right? But he reminded us we might need some money, you know, to survive here. So we set up a price structure and then added, no one will be turned away for inability to pay, and that's the spirit. If we have 1,000 people show up on opening night and 550 people can't get in, I promise you, okay, I promise you, I will make it worthwhile. You will have made it worthwhile to show up, and I will find other things for you to do that evening and certainly give you a heads-up first shot for Tuesday and Wednesday.
Okay, now, how many folks have you gotten so far commitments from in terms of people buying advanced tickets? Is it going well? How's it looking?
It's a lot more anarchistic than that. We're not doing tickets, man. It's all the honor system. It's all like, you said this, thank you. Please keep your word, okay? And show up and do such and such. We're going to have like a donation, this or that there, where you can drop something in there, and we'll point to it, but we're not going to beat you over the head and spoil a whole evening talking about money. I got one important thing to say about money here. This thing costs tens of thousands of dollars to put together, okay? And essentially, it's free for everyone. If we've been working 24/8 on this for over a year, me and Sylvie virtually alone, okay, no sponsors. If we had been thinking about money, this is a great lesson for the progressive community, for anybody in any realm. If we, as you know, most of the listeners must know, if we had been thinking about money, we would have never got this thing off the ground, man. We just made it our point to focus on what was important, and everyone knows what that is. We got these people to commit primarily out of generosity of their heartbeats. All the people are coming. I mean, some people are being paid something, but nobody is being paid what they usually get paid. And there are an awful lot of people who are coming just because they know this is important. And, you know, the bottom line is, they got to be here. We got to do something yesterday. People are coming because they know we're all in trouble on several counts, and they figure this is a shot. I think it's the last shot, personally. I think if we don't change lives in Santa Cruz with a core group of people getting on fire, okay, it's all over. You know.
We're talking with Richard Oxman, who's shepherding the One Dance Summit. That's going to be Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And does it start at 6:15 on Monday, or does it start earlier on Monday, Richard?
You're a great anchor, Robert. You're just an amazing individual. The question is, does it start at 6:15? Is that the question?
Yeah, it begins on Monday evening, not Monday noon, right?
No, actually it does. In fact, I'm glad you're asking that question because I got a great in. You know, people listen to free radio right now. If you want to have lunch with Greg Ellick and or Eve Engler or Mickey Z, we got a lunch starting at noon, you know, on Monday. And tomorrow, I can't believe this is happening, like, so soon. We need a television and a VCR to use for the Actors Theater, where Donna Wallach is coming in from over the hill, and she's going to do something on the prison industrial complex, playing the stuff from Leonard Peltier and others, you know. We got somebody who's slated to be executed in February there. We got to stop that. She's going to be there at the Actors Theater. We need a TV and a VCR to put in there during the days. We got, what else is happening at noon? We got some exclusive video footage, I think, going on, or some beautiful footage going on at the Research Center for Nonviolence at 12 o'clock, I believe. And you have to look at the schedule on onedancesummit.org or give me a call at 427-5353.
So
in the evening, though, in the evening, yes, please show up no later than 6:15. There will be a really huge, beautiful
festivities begin
to greet you.
The event begins at noon on Monday at what, Resource Center for Nonviolence?
There'll be something going on there. There'll be something going on at the Actors Theater. This is on top of my head right now. And there'll be something going on at a lunch. I don't want to give away the lunch location. If you call me, I'll get you in on that lunch.
So that's three different locations we're talking so far.
Huh?
You're going to have three different events happening around you.
Right, at noon. If people want to volunteer, here you go, Robert, thanks. If people want to volunteer, show up at 900 High Street at 11 o'clock in the morning, okay, at the sanctuary there, at the First Congregational Church. We are going to have a volunteers meeting, and that's a great place to help us and get started if we want to. That's a great thing to do because we're getting too many phone calls maybe. Let's see. And in the evening, like you were saying, if you're not free until the evening, please show up in solidarity, okay? Whether or not you get in, we'll try to get you in. At 6:15 to 6:30, there'll be special music being played, inspirational music there. And then we're going to get in there, and we're going to get started. Mickey's going to start about 7 sharp.
So that's all going to be happening today, tomorrow, the next day, and the day after.
I got the sound guy from L.A. Posse, L.A. Sound Posse, Dave Adelson. He's coming in at 4 o'clock in the morning. And unless somebody helps me out with this, I'm going to have to tear myself away from the computer at 4 o'clock in the morning and go pick him up or meet him. So if someone's got a place for him to crash in the office, let me know, okay?
Okay, so you're looking for some both technical assistance and some accommodations and volunteers.
I'm looking for everything. Mainly we're looking for people to support, you know, what we're doing. And
just people to show up, too.
And people to show up, too, yes. So we can, you know, boom, 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 boom. This is going to get national coverage. It should be live on radio for all 3 days. And we've got all the... if anyone wants to contact the media, please feel free to tell them, remind them. This is a historic event leading up to another historic event. We want to have coverage before, during, and after. Okay.
Right. So, Robert, how can people reach you to be able to offer their help and also to get more information?
Okay. Time to call. Please call people 427-5353 in Santa Cruz. Give your information slowly, and I'll get right back to you. Or show up at 11 o'clock in the morning at 900 High Street on Monday at the First Congregational Church. I think that's about it. Yeah. Okay.
Hey, well, listen, if you've got any additional bulletins or updates, my show goes on until 1, so don't feel...
Thank you so much for all
you can call back
so many
if you'd
years.
Like.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, Richard, thank you very much, and we'll be seeing you tomorrow.
Okay, man, thanks.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides slamming it at you. My apologies to those of you who are still left, and I suppose there probably aren't many, who tuned in to hear the Under God presentation of Michael Newdow. First of all, for not having it, because we're not going to have much of it. We're going to have a little bit of it now, but not much because of the bad quality. And secondly, because we have this important announcement from Richard Oxman, which came an hour early. So we're pretty makeshift here at Free Radio. We're pirates, matey, so I guess that kind of goes with the territory. But again, my apologies to those who had different expectations. I actually had some different expectations myself. So anyway, I do have here, and we're going to go now to a bit of Michael Newdow from yesterday. And again, it's... you're going to have to kind of pay close attention. Newdow is quite pretty audible, though the recording is not the best. The problem lies in the difficulty hearing the questioners, who are the Supreme Court justice stand-ins, lawyers in black robes who are there to question Newdow, again, to kind of help him prepare. And again, the issue for those of you who just tuned in, Michael Newdow is challenging the use of the words under God in the Pledge of Allegiance. He has nothing against the Pledge of Allegiance. He believes the words under God, however, make it a religious exercise. And he believes that that is inappropriate and a violation of the Constitution, offensive to him and something that should be struck. And indeed has been struck in the Ninth Circuit, although I guess that has been put on hold pending the Supreme Court's ruling on this, and the Supreme Court has taken it for review. Let's hear a little bit of that now, and here we go.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. The members of this Court follow the principles of the Establishment Clause and considers the purposes for which that Establishment Clause, that uniquely American invention, was presented. And I think this case is going to be the easiest case you've ever had. If you follow your own principle dicta, and follow what you've said in your own cases and the logic, especially in the schools, this is going to be the easiest case you've ever had. If you follow your hearts, however, some of you are going to struggle with this case. And that's why we have an Establishment Clause.
Mr. Newdow, how do we get to the Establishment Clause without getting to the issue of your I believe the Ninth Circuit opinion gave fairly short shrift describing you as a parent. And in fact, what does the effect of your non-custodial parental status have on your story?
I question whether or not I'm a non-custodial parent. I have joint custody of my child. I've had joint physical custody of my child throughout this litigation. I lost legal custody for...
But isn't it legal custody that gives a parent the right to participate in educational and religious upbringing?
I don't think so, and there's a number of other grounds for standing, which you haven't seen in the brief. But I go to my child, I volunteer in my child's class, and I'm there when the Pledge of Allegiance is being recited. So that's essentially the same as Lynch v. Donnelly and Allegheny versus the ACLU, in which those individuals are confronted with religious dogma that they don't wish to see. I have that, so I don't even need to be a parent at all. I'm there as a result of the school board and the petitioners placing this religious pledge in front of us.
And that's the basis for your standing and your influence, right?
That's one. I also am a custodial parent as far as I'm concerned. I've been intimately involved with my child's life since the beginning. The mother has the right to choose the school only up until for about 2 days. And if the court's orders, which again you don't have, shows that I have actually equal rights to the mother, except for the 2-day time that it would take me to get into court. So she has no increased rights over me. It's never come up. As a matter of fact, I would note that when I was before the Ninth Circuit, the mother tried to keep me from taking my daughter to view me at the Ninth Circuit, and that was 1 month after the sole custody order was issued. And in fact, I won. The court said, yes, you do have the right to take the child to the Ninth Circuit. So as I can show you, the sole custody order, which is no longer in existence, we now have joint legal custody, is just a formality. And California law says, in fact, that there is no such thing. There's no specific definition for sole legal custody, whatever the judge makes it up to be.
You say in your petition that the framers broke from a long tradition of associating religious beliefs with civil authority, and that the framers intended to completely disassociate those two arenas. And that can be seen by the strength of the language that is embodied within the First Amendment to the Constitution. Are you suggesting that as a result of that, the framers of this Constitution would have found that the inclusion of the word under God and the Pledge of Allegiance was unconstitutional?
And clearly they would have found it.
Then why is it that that very same First Congress adopted a policy of selecting a paid chaplain to open each session of Congress?
They did that before the Establishment Clause was even introduced. The Establishment Clause was introduced by James Madison on June 8, 1789. The congressional chaplains were first initiated in May and April of that year. So they were in existence. And we know that politicians like to have their gods in their government. And no politician today, and I assume back then, would like to go on record as saying, let's get rid of this. That's why we have 99 senators coming out against me.
But you're not asking this court, are you, to overrule or to reconsider the decision in March, are you?
I am not asking.
That's not before this court.
Not before this court.
How do you distinguish?
I think Marsh is very easily distinguished. Marsh involved, first of all, an unbroken history of 200 years, unambiguous. We have in the pledge 62 years when it was serving its purposes quite well without the words under God.
So the length of years determines the constitutional issue?
Well, I'm not particularly fond of Marsh. I'm not sure that was correctly decided. But if you are going to make that carved out exception, as this court has referred to it, you've made out that exception for that length of time. One goes through the opinion in Marsh, it's not a single principled statement in the majority opinion that talks about the meaning of the Establishment Clause. And I think that...
Are you saying that there's no principle reasoning at all in the Marsh?
In the Marsh case, as far as what the Establishment Clause means, I would say, yes, that's true. There's nothing that talks about the purposes of the Establishment Clause as far as why we have congressional chaplains. And I think the idea of paying from tax dollars two people to stand in front of the Congress and the legislature, both houses of the legislative branch, and say that we should worship God is completely antithetical. James Madison said the same thing, right? As you know.
I'm curious about your views on what test ought to apply. Clearly in March, they didn't apply the Lenin test that existed at the time, but they didn't apply it. This court didn't apply that test in the next case. And the Ninth Circuit referred to three different tests and merging those three tests. What kind of test of the Establishment Clause question would you say should be applied?
I think any of the tests could be applied. And if you apply any of the tests, you will find that the pledge of allegiance fails. I would probably go with the neutrality test, which every one of the justices here who has written an opinion has mentioned. And clearly, we have a question whether or not there exists a God. That is probably the prototypical question in religion. Does God exist? And we haven't been neutral in that. The government of the United States has said, yes, there exists a God, and we are under it. And that is clearly unconstitutional. That violates the neutrality test.
How do you respond to the ceremonial deism argument that this isn't really reference to religion? This is really an acknowledgement of the religious heritage of our country that's been there from the very founding of the country.
Well, clearly we've had a religious heritage, but we've also had a heritage of separation of church and state. And that's what they put in the Constitution. If you read through the Constitution, there is no mention of God. And why not? We saw in all the constitutions of the states at the time, in 9 out of 11 of the constitutions that existed, there were mentions of God. There were religious tests that you had to take to get the benefits of citizenship. In our federal constitution, it's absent. It's striking that it's absent. The oath of office, the only oath of office in the Constitution, is for the president. There's no so help me God. There's nothing else like that. All we have in the body of the original Constitution is Article 6, Clause 3, which says that no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. Why would they put that in there if it was such a foundational aspect of our Constitution? I don't think that was the case. I think that the law is clearly on my side, and the history is on my side.
You refer to history and you say 60 years plus, but wasn't this only legally sanctioned in the 40s by Congress?
That's correct, but it existed since 1892, and it was used, it was proposed by President Harrison to have it pronounced in the schools, and so we had a 62-year history when it was serving its purposes quite well.
Well, but it wasn't legally sanctioned until the 1940s, and then the change was only made approximately a decade later. Doesn't that undercut your argument with regard to the long history?
I don't think so. I mean, we're talking about 12, even if you do it that way and you ignore the actual history, which is another 40 years, you're talking 12 years out of 60. So that's still not an unbroken history from the beginning of time. And in Marsh, which is a carved-out exception, that goes all the way back to the founding of the nation. This doesn't. This goes back, if you're going to start from 1942, you're almost 200 years later. So I don't think that's...
I think what about our national model?
Well, this is a different case. I can't defend the national model. I think that God should be out of our government altogether. All religion should. We can acknowledge religion, but we shouldn't endorse religion. And that clearly, to me, is an endorsement. But in this case, we're talking about in the schools. And this court has a 9 out of 9 history. In McCollum, in Engle v. Vitale, Abington v. Shemp, in Epperson v. Arkansas.
So is the pledge only unconstitutional when it's recited in the schools?
I don't think so, but this court has narrowed the question to within the schools, and I think within the schools, clearly it's unconstitutional. I think that sometimes this court does not like to take giant leaps and likes to go very slowly, and that seems to be appropriate. I personally would get rid of God in government because it doesn't belong there. That is a religious ideal that many Americans, probably about a fifth, dispute, and even if only one of them disputed it, government is not supposed to be involved in it. No law respecting the establishment of religion.
And how do you distinguish an acknowledgement of religion from an endorsement of religion?
To me, an acknowledgement of religion is taking cognizance of a fact, something that is not disputed. An endorsement is choosing a side. And in my brief, I have an example of the war in Iraq. We now have troops in Iraq. That's a fact. Should we be there? That would be not a fact. That would be an opinion, and that would be an endorsement if you said yes or no. Here we are endorsing the idea that there is a God. That is not an acknowledgement. If there were a God, and factually so, then we could say there's a God. But we don't know that. And that's what the whole issue is, and why the framers made an establishment of this.
What did the legislature say was the purpose of adding that? And don't we have to give some deference to what the Congress has said as that purpose?
Well,
deciding whether, in fact, that was a religious thing.
Well, they said it was a religious purpose. They said the inclusion of God in the pledge, therefore, and notice they didn't say under God the phrase, they said God, the entity. The inclusion of God in the phrase, therefore, would further acknowledge the dependence of our people and our government upon the moral directions of the Creator, not a Creator, the Judeo-Christian Creator, actually the Christian Creator. So it seems to me that that is a purpose, to acknowledge dependence upon the Creator. That is not an acknowledgement. That is to say, we are endorsing the idea there's a Creator and telling and urging our citizens to pray to Him, which is no different from praying to Jesus or to Muhammad or to any other religious entity.
But wasn't the basis of the separation of church and state not so much what you alluded to, which was the question, well, can we determine whether there is a God or not? Certainly, I don't think too many of the framers would have had a problem answering that question. But wasn't it more that they were concerned about the political implications and the power of the religion at their time?
I think so, and that's what we're seeing here. Look at what's happening here. 99 senators stood out on the
Capitol steps. But it's not really a question of whether there's a God or not. That's not really what we're about today, is it?
I think it's definitely the question. I think that people with religion, it becomes ingrained into them. The question of a God is so fundamental to so many people in this nation that they don't even see how they're imposing this upon others and imposing it upon our government. And they're not allowed to employ the machinery of the state to have their own individual religious ideals perpetuated in our government.
Well, how do you respond to the argument that really there is a secular purpose to the pledge, and that is to make the children more patriotic, and that including under God in there really doesn't defeat that secular purpose and turn it into a religious purpose, because it's not a prayer?
Well, I would disagree that it's not a prayer, but even if you took that position, this court, in Minas Wolfe v. Govitis, and in West Virginia v. Barnett, stated that this pledge was serving its secular, patriotic purposes quite well. Why would you stick in the two words, under God, if it's doing its job quite nicely? Except for, these are the two words, under God. What else can that be except religious? I can't understand how it
works. You also said in Barnett that it was okay to address this problem by making the same as the pledge voluntary. Why should we go beyond that? Reach your position that this voluntary situation reflecting the effect towards
it. Well, West Virginia v. Barnett had the pledge, as you know, without the words under God. And so all it said, and it wasn't decided on religious grounds. It was brought on religious grounds. The two children were Jehovah's Witnesses, and that's why they wanted to deal with it. Minus W. Bolitis in West Virginia v. Barnett. Still, it was Jehovah's Witnesses who brought it on religious grounds, saying that they shouldn't have to say this because it offends their religion. The court did not decide on that ground. They said it on free speech, and they said that the right of free speech in this country includes the right not to say something. And so on that ground, it was decided. But I'm not sure how that would affect now.
How are the parents in Barnett any different in what they wanted for their children than you are and what you want for your child?
Government wasn't infringing upon their rights of religion. Government wasn't establishing a religion in Barnett. They weren't imposing a religious ideal upon their children. The children interpreted it as religion, and they said this violates their free speech right, their free exercise right. But this did not involve the establishment of clause at all in Barnett.
And you didn't raise a free exercise claim in this case, is that correct?
Actually, I did raise a free exercise claim. I said that I and my daughter both have the right to exercise our religion of atheism if she chooses to be an atheist without the government interfering with that. And I think there's definitely interference when you're there with all of your compatriots and you can't say a pledge of allegiance without having the religious dogma that you find offensive stuck in the middle of that.
So this, you're alleging a free exercise and an establishment clause violation in this case?
I am. The court, however, is only accepted for certiorari, the establishment
clause.
Sure.
And is there any evidence of a coercive psychological effect on your daughter in this record?
Yes.
What's that evidence?
Well, if you compare it to Lee versus Weissman in 1992, there we had children who were almost on the brink of adulthood. These were high school seniors at the
graduation situation.
Correct. There was an invited guest speaking at their graduation. There was no need for the individual to say anything. And it was one time in the life in the history of the individual. Here we have children, very impressionable, ages 5, 6, 7, who have it 2,000 times over the course of 13 years, led by their own governmental agents, their teachers. So if the former was coercive, this is coercive a billion times over. I don't think there's much question on that.
And is there a coercion element to the establishment clause analysis?
You
does it have to be there?
No, it doesn't. This court has said that you don't need coercion. They said it is sufficient. Establishment. If you have coercion, that is, in fact, a violation of the Establishment Clause. If you don't have it, you still could violate the Establishment Clause in any of the other number of ways that this Court has enunciated.
Why do we have to change the pledge, though? Why don't we just say that people can choose to absent themselves from the classroom for the next 30 to 40 seconds?
For the same reason that we could also say that we shall hereby establish Roman Catholicism to be the official religion of the United States. You don't have to participate, but we've established it. It violates the Establishment Clause. It does exactly what we don't want to do. It turns people into second-class citizens. This is no different from Rosa Parks on the bus. This is making people who sit in the back of the bus. You could say you can make all the same excuses that petitioners have made in this case. But sit in the back of the bus. It's de minimis. The bus gets there at the same time. You still have a seat. Well, what are we talking about here?
But hasn't this court moved more and more in the direction in terms of sanctioning after-school programs that are religious in nature on school property?
Well, they haven't sanctioned them at all. They've upheld those. I said as long as there is a limited forum, an open forum for any kind of group, you can't discriminate against religion. And I think that's an appropriate response. This is not that. This is government endorsing speech. When government endorses speech, that's a violation of the Establishment Clause, per se. When it's private speech, which is what is involved after school, when they have individuals doing what they want to do, then government is not supposed to get involved, and it's supposed to allow the private individual to do whatever he or she sees fit.
How is this different from using coins to say in God we trust, and the motto in God we trust, and the national anthem referring to God if anybody gets to the first stanza?
Right.
How do you distinguish those?
Well, I I'm not going to defend the motto. I believe these things are unconstitutional alone. But I think that this is clearly different. These are children, and they're led by their teacher, and it's an active process. They're saying the words, we are a nation under God. The other is money that they probably don't read and you can divide them.
Well, how did this court, in cases like Lynch and County of Allegheny, refer to the pledge along with the motto, the coins, and the other ceremonial deity factors that you point to? The pledge has been among those as a reason to uphold ceremonial deity, not to consider it a violation of the establishment.
And as Justice O'Connor has stated, that every government practice must be judged in its unique circumstances to determine whether or not a constitution endorsement or a disapproval of religious belief. I think that you can look in Engel, where Justice Douglas did the same thing, and he gave that list. And among the things he included was the Bible reading in the school. And the next year, Bible reading was determined to be unconstitutional. So I think that clearly this listing process is not, until you actually examine each action, you can't tell whether or not it's constitutional. I also would say that I question that whole process, the idea that because we do all these other unconstitutional things, it's okay to do this one. To me, it seems just the same as in 1954, as saying that, well, we have blacks and whites who can't integrate at water fountains, and we can't integrate in housing developments, and we can't integrate in railroad cars, so therefore we shouldn't be able to integrate in schools. It doesn't seem to me to be a persuasive argument.
I apologize. That was the 15-minute warning and not the 5-minute warning. I apologize.
I'd like to go back to the standing question briefly. Let's assume for a moment that after discussing the issue with your former spouse, she and your daughter decided that your daughter wanted to go to catechism class. Do you believe you have the ability to prevent that from happening under the terms of your divorce decree?
Just to clarify, we were never married. Under the legal custody issue, it would be up to the court. I don't think I would object to that. If she, in fact, chose to do that on her time, that's absolutely fine. And I think that the cases In re Murga, In re Weiss show that each parent has the right to do whatever he or she sees fit with the child as far as religion is concerned. But as far as, for instance, if she wanted to take her into a Catholic school and enroll her there, then absolutely I would have absolutely the right to stop that, and I think the court would not allow her to do that.
You'd have the right to make a motion in the state court to stop that. You wouldn't have the right to invalidate the Catholic school's curriculum or program, would you?
Not the Catholic school, but the private program.
So my question, and this relates to standing, I want to get back to that issue because it troubles me. One of the requirements of standing is that your issue is addressable by the federal court. Isn't your real recourse in the state court if the child is in a school that you don't approve of?
I never said I don't agree with the school. It's a fine school. I don't agree with challenges.
Well, not the school as a whole, but the practice of the school saying the pledge of allegiance with under God in it. Isn't your recourse really in state court?
No more than it was in Lee versus Weissman or Santa Fe Independent School District Vito or Ingleby Vitale or any of the other cases. This is a constitutional issue, a federal constitutional violation taking place in the public schools. The federal courts are exactly the place to do it.
Take standing just a little bit differently. As I understand it, people like standing on behalf of the daughter and also in the
I'm not sure what you mean.
Sure.
I had to withdraw her.
Third party standing.
I have standing. It affects me what you are doing for my child.
Are you, as the direct standing of the drill, which is the first issue of standing survey, as to that, what test do you apply and does the coercive test that circuit decided to combine in the department, does that apply to you as an adult in the school with the same force and effects that you say to the students as you did to the Weissman and San Francisco?
No, I would say that it doesn't apply in that degree. I mean, certainly you take some fortitude to stand in front of, with all your fellow patriots and pledge allegiance to your flag and say something differently. And in fact, I do, and it is coercive, and in fact, it does have numerous effects, which is one of the reasons I have standing another one of the bases.
But both Lee versus Weissman and Santa Fe were specific to the underage children, correct?
Yes.
And the idea there was that children in that situation, even though they weren't specifically compelled to attend, as you need to suffice that the circumstances of having their teacher lead them amongst all their other students added a particular force and effect to the study. Is that a fair statement?
Correct. And it's much more so, obviously, in this case.
And why is that? Given the standing, that's a focus on standing.
Well, I mean, the standing issue, as far as a parent who has the right to make sure my child is not injured, it doesn't matter how the injury is occurred. I mean, I have the right to make it, if the school district decided to whack her over the hand with rulers or to do any other harm to her, I have the right to say it's not doing that to my child.
Is it one of your available remedies in California to withdraw your daughter from the public school system altogether and homeschool her and not require her to recite any pledge or be around those who are reciting the pledge?
I'm sure that is one of my remedies, but this court has never said that somebody has to make a change in their lifestyle in order to avoid a constitutional violation. This is a constitutional violation that needs to be remedied by not violating the Constitution.
But isn't it only a constitutional violation if it indeed is coercive, such that she is an unwilling student who is nonetheless made to recite the pledge? And here, in the district's own policy, it is only willing students who are required to participate?
Well, as the court has said in Lee versus Weissman, it doesn't matter if you're willing. There is coercion that takes a place there. And as we just discussed, it doesn't have to be coercion. You also have the purpose test of Lemon, the text test of Lemon, the endorsement test, the outsider test, with every single test that he gets violated by this. So if we skip the coercion, it's fine with me.
How are we still going to violate the Lemon test?
Well, the purpose of Congress, the petitioners in this case, but clearly the purpose of Congress, is to put God in our government.
How is that clearly the purpose of government? Where
they said it.
They said many things in there. They also said that the purpose of it was a reflection of the historical perspective of this country as being founded by our framers with respect to a belief of God was opposing the inalienable rights that so preciously declared in our Declaration of Independence.
Well, I would
question historical perspective. They also looked at it as a secular.
Well, I would question if they really believed that there was much of a historic purpose. If we look through President Eisenhower when he signed the bill, he said, from this day forward, the millions of our school children will daily proclaim the dedication of our nation and our people to the Almighty. There's nothing historic there. And the key phrases in the House Report 1693, it's talking about dedicating and acknowledging the Almighty in the present. Very little about the history. And the history, it seems to me if I were a framer and I came up with this magnificent clause that says no law respecting an establishment of religion, that I'm not going to allow government to get involved with the religion because I've seen all the harms that it does, I would be pretty insulted to find out 200 years ago that the way they're going to pay homage to that idea is by finding out what my religion was and imposing that upon the people.
And they were not so insulted to kick the chaplain out of the house.
Nor the politicians. We know right now in the constitutions, constitutional provisions in 8 states today in the United States of America are provisions that say things like South Carolina's, anybody who denies the existence of a supreme being shall not hold any public office under this constitution. Right? That's 1,300 legislators among those 8 states. Not a single
part of that experience.
And you're listening to a very bad tape of Michael Newdow addressing the Monterey College of the Law panel of 8 who are acting as a Supreme Court, a mock Supreme Court, in preparation for Mr. Newdow's appearance before the Supreme Court in a couple of months. arguing that "under God" should be struck from the Pledge of Allegiance, where it was instituted in the mid-50s as part of the anti-communist hysteria that was sweeping the country. That's my editorial comment, but that's, in fact, I believe the truth. And he makes some very interesting arguments, some of which are really hard to hear, and all of which is pretty difficult to listen to if you're used to some kind of relatively clear radio broadcasting. And my apologies to everyone. I thought it was important enough to play. Indeed, I went on longer. I checked with a couple of people, and they who were listening to it, even in spite of the bad broadcast quality, were interested in hearing more of it, so I played some more. But I can't really justify playing still more. If anybody's interested in this, however, if you give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, I can try to put you in touch with the actual L.A. folks who did a very good recording of this. I'm assuming it's pretty good. They had more professional equipment, or you possibly could hear the rest of this. We have an incoming call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that the tape came through just fine. I could hear both sides.
Really?
Yeah.
Amazing. You may have sharp hearing. Are you saying you want to hear more of this?
Yeah, I'm on the internet.
Okay, well, if a number of people are calling in and want to actually hear the rest of this, I'm happy to play the rest of it. Is that your request, caller?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's one. Come on, you folks, call in, and we may play some more of this tape. Of course, you also should be contributing $10 and $20 per call would be nice.
Yeah, right.
Hey, any other announcements or thoughts, caller? Any comments on what you've heard?
No, not really.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Our phone number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. Boy, well, maybe a little bit more of the tape is appropriate. Perhaps some people are wondering why a show concerned with civil rights for the homeless and human rights for people who are outside would be interested in this rather arcane issue of two words being struck from the Pledge of Allegiance. And, of course, what, as far as I'm concerned, this involves is government coercion. And government coercion, of course, is applied most strikingly on homeless people in terms of violating their very right to live. But this is an example of intellectual and conscience coercion, which I think is important. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi. I was listening to it over the radio, and it's not real clear, but I could understand all of it.
You want to hear some more?
Sure. It was all understandable.
Okay, well, I'm going to play some more then.
Thanks.
Bye. I'm glad to hear you callers calling in. All right, so if you don't want to hear this, you better call fast, because I'm about to continue with the Friday evening presentation at the Monterey College of the Law by Michael Newdow in front of a panel of experts. Here's a final call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
It was audible, but it does sound like crap
it's
to
true.
Me. Maybe I'm just a snooty, snobby, digital 21st century boy or something, but my request for you would be to invest in some better recording equipment. That would be my request, but I don't care whether or not you play the tape. Thanks.
Sure, thank you. And no, that's a good criticism, and indeed, that's the V-man who does do excellent work, and he has a standard that all of us aspire to in terms of, you know, technical proficiency. And, I'm hoping that I'm probably going to try to do such investment. I actually thought this was a better machine. The trouble is it had to be moved further away. And the one that was closer had an automatic voice cutoff, which was unfortunately left on. So there were numerous technical problems. Perhaps I can enlist the V-man to come and do some, to assist me in these kinds of recordings. But better equipment is definitely a good idea. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, hi. I just let you put in a vote for listening to a little bit more of it if you can.
Sure, that's good, and I'll be happy to do that. Are you in the area of Santa Cruz, or are you
yeah.
out of here?
Yeah, this is my church every Sunday.
Oh, great. Well, thank you. We'll put on some more.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, the people have spoken, hence, here we go.
Yeah.
asking the court to ban the pledge in any setting outside of the classroom?
If the court chose to do that, I would certainly not object. However, the question accepted for certiorari here is within the confines of the elementary schools. And in elementary school, clearly the government cannot indoctrinate children 2,000 times over the course of their lives with the idea that there exists a God any more than there exists Jesus. And I would again emphasize that I would ask the court to ask, how is this different from Jesus? There is no difference. In fact, in the record, we have from the district court judge, the magistrate judge, a conversation in which he says, I repeatedly asked, how is this different? And he says, well, under Jesus excludes so many, and under God doesn't exclude so many.
The bright line we should draw is between elementary school and middle school?
I would draw no line, but if there's a line to be drawn, clearly with a 9 out of 9 record of this court upholding the idea that the Establishment Clause should be strictly enforced within the confines of the schools, I would certainly put it somewhere in the elementary schools, if not the secondary schools.
Going back to the standing issue, you talked some about the lack of data in the record about the effect on individual children or groups of children. Other than your colloquial idea of the coerced impact on children because of their impressionable age, there is, in fact, though, an affidavit in the record by your own daughter who says she doesn't mind saying the pledge, and from her mother who says she has no objection to her daughter reciting the pledge. We know that there's this background of a divorce and of a custody proceeding between the two of you, all tied up in California law. And tell me, address the government's and the school district's positions on the Rooker-Feldman Doctrine and why this whole issue that you're trying to raise isn't sufficiently bound up in state law issues in the custody proceeding to take it out of the realm of something the federal court should deal with.
I would first just like to correct the record. My daughter has not ever had an affidavit. She's never stated this at all. This is just hearsay from the mother who interfered, tried to intervene, and failed in her intervention attempt. As far as the Rooker-Feldman...
The representation that affidavit is in the record is in the brief file by the government.
Not that the daughter ever said anything, just that the mother says the daughter said something. The daughter, I can say, okay, she says she's an elephant. That doesn't make her an elephant. As far as the Rooker-Feldman Doctrine, if you want to go that to the extreme that it seems petitioners are asking, then any parent in a custody situation would never have an opportunity to bring any case in federal law.
Isn't it true that no parent who's brought a case in any of these constitutional issues and prevailed had anything less than full custody of their children?
I don't think that's in the record at all. Nobody ever tried to intervene and to interfere with this.
The petitioner's brief goes at length to point out how that is true, that every significant case here involves parents who have complete custodial rights over their children who are involved in the cases and allegedly are having their constitutional rights impaired, unlike yourself.
I don't believe that that's in the record in any of those cases. All it says is that there are parents, and nobody tried to intervene subsequently and said they're not. So they may have been just in the exact same shoes I was.
Does that make a difference?
No, I don't think so, because I think that in my situation, I am a parent. This is my child. I love her. She sleeps over my house. We go on trips together, and I don't need whatever label the state of California puts on me. I'm still injured. Standing requires a personal harm to me, and I am injured, and my child is being indoctrinated. As a matter of fact, I would make the argument that I have more standing than the average than the normal person, because we are, as you have on your record, we have a mother who says that she's a Christian and indoctrinating her child with Christianity. I have a right to have the state not interfere with our interparental choices for our child. And right now, the state is coming in and said, yes, the mother is correct, the father is wrong, injuring me, I think, directly
That's the nature of California family law, and I think that's why we have a Rooker-Feldman Doctrine, to take these types of disputes out of this court and make constitutional rules that apply to everyone. That somehow are impacted by the fact that you have a custody dispute. This court has difficulty looking behind the rulings of state courts on issues like this.
This issue has nothing to do with the custody issue. The question is whether or not petitioners are allowed to indoctrinate.